Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hey, I'm Brian Hyatt, and this is Rolling Stone Music Now. I'm in the studio with Sarah Grant and Simon Vosick-Levinson. So, it's summer, which I understand for some people means like going out and having fun and listening to music in the sun. For me, it often just means sitting in an air-conditioned room writing rather than sitting in a heated room writing. But it's a nice switch-up. But yeah, I understand people go out and have fun. They like fall in love and stuff, and they have summer adventures, and so we need summer songs. And therefore, there is a list on the Rolling Stone website. These are 2018 songs of the summer, and it's kind of a idiosyncratic list because it's writers' actual tastes. They're not pandering to you guys out there. They're actually telling you the weird shit they actually like. And we'll also talk a little bit about what's actually out there in the world that people may be experiencing as their collective songs of summer. But first, I wanted to talk about the charts, which often might help us determine what the songs of summer are. If you go to Billboard's Hot 100 right now, and this has been going on for a while with various artists, because of the way that the Billboard charts function, it's packed with basically Drake, previously Cardi B. It's often whatever the big album that is out, the purported singles chart is now just a list of all the songs on that album. And this has happened why, Simon?
So a while back, the chart masters decided they wanted to more accurately reflect how people listen to music now. In the old days, if you wanted to listen to a new hot song from your favorite artist, you had to go to the record store and buy a literal single, like a 45 record or a single, or a radio programmer had to choose a song that was given to them by a label marketed as a single. Now, as everyone knows, you go on any of the streaming sites, you can just listen to Drake's new album, and if everyone in the world is listening to Drake's new album a lot, then like the 18th song on his album can be a single in the same sense that the one that would have previously been marketed as a single is a single. They're all singles now.
At least that's the rationale.
That's the logic. So right. So now, and you know, I think there is logic to that, right? So that if you want to reflect how people listen to music, the charts now more closely reflect what people are listening to by taking streaming numbers into account along with other measurements of popularity.
And I agree with that. All that said, when you look at the actual results, and again, it's just like you want to see sort of what are the hot songs right now. You basically just see the hot song is the Drake album. And that's there's something, as much as it feels right on one level, it's like, hey, it's cool to know what people are literally actually listening to.
Right.
On the other hand, doesn't feel like what a singles chart is supposed to be. And in England, for instance, they have rules that keep this from happening. It's limited in some way so that you get basically a more diverse chart. You see all the different songs in the top 10, not just, again, the freaking track listing of one album. Does it seem kind of weird to you that you look at a chart now and it's a track listing from an album?
I mean, absolutely. But I think that's part of the kind of wonder of Drake that, you know, he keeps kind of baffling the music industry.
But it's not just Drake, though. It's
not just Drake, yeah. But Drake has really kind of cracked the code of streaming. I mean, he has been multiple times the most streamed artist, the most viewed artist. I think in the future, he will be a great case study for whatever happens with the charts, however we decide to go forward and measure success in the music industry. I mean, Drake is really what people are looking to in terms of those metrics and how to take advantage.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things is I think there's like, what, 28 songs on the album?
Right, yeah.
So that is part of the trick. There's almost, I mean, he should just come up with 40 songs so then it could have be the entire top 40. In fact, that literally might come next. But for me, I mean, I'll be less subtle. I think this is broken. I don't think the charts, I think it's great to sort of know exactly what people are listening to on one level. That should maybe, it's nice to have that data. But that to me is not a singles chart. It's so, yes, most people are listening to music by streaming, but it's so devaluing the idea of a single. And that you can't tell me that, like, there might be five tracks from Drake that's floating around on various radio formats. There cannot be 28. And what this is implying is that there's 28 singles on an album. And it just, to me, it ruins the whole idea of a chart. And then a point that Simon and I have been talking about that I think is really interesting is people are constantly like, okay, well, these artists keep breaking all these records that were held by like Michael Jackson or the Beatles, or even, you know, he tied or broke some Bruce Springsteen record for number of singles on an album. And it's, the problem is, it's truly apples and oranges. And I think that's where Billboard, if Billboard really screwed up, and I think they did. I think they were attempting to be very progressive, which is great. And I of course streaming should be highly reflecting these charts, but they didn't think it all the way through. And now what they've done, at least for the moment, is ruin the historical basis of these charts, because you cannot look at this chart that's measuring the actual listening of every track on an album versus an age when there were actual singles selected from the album, and then say like, oh, this is, you know, technically it is breaking the Beatles record or whatever, but it's just not the same. It's just, so we've lost the ability to measure these things against each other, which isn't like, in the scheme of things, isn't like a loss worth weeping about, but it is like mildly annoying for people who want to have a way of keeping the continuity of these things, and they've broken the chart. It's some other chart now, I would say.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think what streaming has revealed is that the world that we thought we had, in which the charts accurately reflected what people were listening to, was actually something that was crafted by gatekeepers. That world doesn't exist anymore, and so the charts are trying to catch up with that. And well, I think that's a hard thing to do.
But here's the counter argument to that. That is true, but the thing is, people always were listening to albums. Right. Like, we just didn't know. Right. There just wasn't some dude hiding in your record player, like marking down what songs you were listening to. And that's what I'm saying. Right. It's reflecting something that wasn't measurable before, which is cool, but doesn't seem related to the idea of like, what's the single that's hot?
The single as we knew it no longer exists. Yeah. It doesn't matter which song you choose to put marketing money into to make a music video or to get, you know, in front of radio programmers. That doesn't matter as much anymore.
And that's valid too. And I'm not saying that, basically all I'm saying is they just need to make one rule tweak so that there's like no more than three songs from an album can be on a singles chart at the same time, and that way you have, all of a sudden it opens up and breathes and you can see what's actually going on with all the different artists and not have the, it, because this is just it's almost like there's only two ways that it's valuable. It's just like, yes, Drake is very popular, that's good to know, and then I guess it's interesting to have the exact figures, but other than that, I just don't know. And we're joined by Brendan Klinkenberg. Brendan, we're talking about this issue of the charts and how specifically the Billboard Hot 100, and how the changes they've made have made it so it's like basically it's just the tracks of the Drake album. Does that bother you at all? Does it feel off to you as far as the singles chart, or are you one of the people who are actually okay with this?
I'm okay with it. I think it's accurate. I think that if we're using the charts as who's being listened to the most by everyone, the changes just made it more accurate. Drake is the most popular. His songs are more popular than anyone else's. If you want the charts to do a different thing, then you can talk about rule changes. But if it's just to measure popularity, that's what it's there for. That's how popular Drake is.
Right. And I would argue that, so you can say that Drake maybe isn't hyper famous or hyper popular in the same way that Michael Jackson or the Beatles were, but that's because the world that created Michael Jackson and the Beatles no longer exists. We're not living in that world anymore.
Yeah, and that has nothing to do with my argument. It's not about Drake at all. It's just about, like, this isn't what a singles chart looks like. There's something peculiar about it. Or maybe they need to produce another song, another way of measuring songs. But anyway, we're talking about Songs of the Summer. And we have this list, again, on the Rolling Stone website of Rolling Stone's Song of the Summer, which is produced purely out of the writer's brains. There is no there's no measurement process whatsoever. It's purely unscientific. It's just pure taste. Brendan, what was your contribution to the list?
I went with the obvious pick, Nice for What.
Number one song.
It's been number one for the entire summer, but it's also, I think, the best song that's been released this year.
Why?
I just love it. I think Drake kind of, for one of the first times in his career, did something unexpected. I think he's been a great synthesis for his entire discography, where he kind of looks at what's going to be popular and then makes like a down the middle version of it. And like, especially when he started to, on Views, really chase the number one spot, where he's making songs like One Dance, which is kind of just like an Afrobeat Drake song. But he saw what was going to be popular. He was watching like all of the trends happen and just kind of like anticipated where he would be, and it worked. Nice for What is a very fast song with no like identifiable chorus. It has a breakdown. Drake, like, it's just a weird song, and it's impressive to me that he could get it to number one. It doesn't sound like a pop hit from 2018.
Well, I think one of the things that's refreshing about this album, you know, we'll end up talking about Drake a lot probably when we're talking about songs of the summer, is yeah, it's a little bit of putting aside that thing of Drake as the world's best A&R guy, Drake as trend hopper, and he's so self-aware, and again, none of these people are doing interviews, so you don't get to, but he's so self-aware, and he got so criticized as sort of a culture vulture kind of trend hopping thing that this may have been a reaction in part to that criticism. Is like, I don't need to do that, I'll actually go in a different way. But let's hear Nice for What, in case you haven't heard it every second.
Yeah. Everybody get your motherfucking roll on. I know shorty and she doesn't want no slow song. Had a man last year, life goes on. Haven't let the thing loose, girl, in so long. You've been inside.
Can we talk about Lauryn Hill for a second? I think it's amazing. Yeah. 20 years after Miseducation, a sample of Lauryn Hill's voice is driving the biggest song of the summer, that, you know, the music still has that power to connect and rule a summer that way.
Yeah, it's such a good chop. And I, like, we were talking about Drake as, like, the A&R. I, like, when I first heard the song, I think ascribed too much premeditation to this. But our writer Elias did interviews with a lot of the producers on Scorpion. And apparently this beat was made while Drake was playing Xbox. He was just playing NBA 2K18.
That's how the magic happens.
Murda Beats, the producer, was just in the room, and he was like, I got the chop to the point that he stopped playing the game, and that's when we knew that we had a song. So I don't think that he was really doing this thing where he was like, everyone says this about me, so I'm going to make a song that's about something else. I think they just, like, hit on something pretty quickly, and it feels spontaneous. I think it's the song of the summer.
I mean, this thing of being in the room and waiting till you hear something you like, is that's how Kanye works, apparently. It's just like, it's a, you know, and that is, listen, I mean, even being in the room while a beat is being made is more than a lot of rappers do, and a lot of rappers don't need to. I mean, Future, just, for example, just, you know, literally gets beats in his email and just, you know, plays them, and he either comes up with something or he doesn't. So there's lots of ways of working.
But, yeah, a lot of Scorpion was sourced through Instagram DMs. Like, they hit, Drake's team is just kind of looking for people, and then they'll just hit you up one-to-one and be like, send me your, like, best beats.
They're always trying to get my GarageBand stuff, and I say no. Their rates suck, I gotta be honest. Ella May Boot Up is really, really, like, a unique vibe. You know, when I did a Tracy Morgan story, it's a throwback to the kind of stuff Tracy Morgan really likes. Like, this is the vibe that he'll put on. This is his preferred R&B vibe, in a way. It's Tracy Morgan core. It's a chill little song. You guys are both big fans of it, right?
Yeah, this song rules. This is another song that's completely out of step with pop trends in 2018. It sounds like it could be, as you say, just like a great R&B hit from, like, the mid-90s. It's kind of slow. It doesn't have a huge, obvious melodic chorus, but it's great.
It also took so long to happen. It's been out for over a year.
Yeah, I think, like, almost 18 months, something like that.
Yeah. And I think that, like, you can make a really good argument for Song of the Summer, but, like, that's kind of, it just waited for the right season to start happening. I'm not really sure what prompted it to start climbing up the charts, but, like, it's here to stay now.
Let's hear it, if we can.
Control my anxiety, feeling like I'm touching the ceiling. When I'm with you, I can't breathe. Boy, you do something to me.
Yeah, like, real throwback stuff, and people, there's all these, like, memes about it, about just how sort of, like, smooth it is. It's just, you know, and sort of bedroomy, and, like, people are actually really treating it like it's from another planet. Actually, it's vibe. It's really interesting. I mean, it's not that alien a vibe, but it is so out of step with the current thing that people are kind of fascinated by that song.
I mean, there's nothing better than, like, kind of a nonsensical chorus that you just sort of, you're singing and you don't really know what you're saying. I mean, when you're looking at the lyrics, obviously, but it's just, I got that kind of carnal groove.
I think there's also something to be said about how, in the age of the algorithm, people respond to something that's different, something that isn't focus grouped to death.
True. And speaking of which, Chris Weingarten couldn't be here today, but we should play his pick because it's very Chris Weingarten.
It's so summery.
Absolutely. It's so good. Like,
it's Death Grips, who are the internet's favorite sort of very abrasive rap thing, noise rap. Yeah, it's the song is called Black Paint. I like noise rap. It's kind of like where I've always kind of fell on them.
It's intense.
It's intense. It's if your summer isn't going super well, if you were just indicted maybe, or just testifying, if you were testifying on the floor of Congress, this might be your song. Death Grips, Black Paint. It's the sound of Paul Manafort in solitary. That's what that is. And there's one huge bummer on this list, which is a song by John Prine called Summer's End, which is, as Simon said, it's about how you're going to die and summer's going to end, and he could have called it August and Everything After, but that was taken. but it's a different vibe. That was Jonathan Bernstein's pick. I like his style. I like that. That's his summer song. But anyway, let's hear Summer's End.
Summer's ends around the bend, just flying. The swimming suits are on the line, just drying. I'll meet you there for a conversation.
You know, I never would have put the Death Grip song together with John Prine, but they're nice companions.
If you're in a really bad mood in the summer, they can both
work. Yeah, they work together.
So you're listening to Rolling Stone Music Now. We're talking songs of the summer, and we'll be right back with a whole lot more.
Hi, I'm your inner dream monologue, and you're fast asleep, so I'll be quick. Great job using the Colgate Optic White Overnight Teeth Whitening Pen before bed. When used as directed, it gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 7 days. So while I fly and talk to animals, you're removing teeth stains with ease. Sweet dreams. And when you wake up, keep on living life to the brightest. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
We are going through, first of all, Rolling Stone's list of the songs of the summer, which are actually writers' individual picks. And, you know, Sarah picked Selena Gomez's Back to You. I told Sarah flat out, I was honest with her, I love Selena Gomez. I think this song is kind of weak. It seems really generic to me. I don't know. It almost ruined my summer to listen to it. I'm being honest with you. I just like
you got to go listen to some Death Grips now.
I had to Death Grip the taste of this song of the summer out of my ears. But let's hear this song if we can, and then maybe you can defend this piece of garbage. No, just kidding. Like,
I wanna hold you when I'm not supposed to. When I'm lying close to someone else, you're stuck in my head, and I can get you out of it if I could do it all again. I know I'd go back to you.
See, for me, it's actually pretty good until the incredibly generic dance production comes in. That's where it kind of falls short for me. But go ahead. Yeah.
The best part for me is the beginning, I will say. I mean, I'm fascinated by your visceral reaction, but I will say that it kind of proves my point, because this song to me is the requisite bummer song of the summer. I mean, it's in the vein of summertime sadness and countless other...
It's like when your ex-boyfriend grows a mustache and gets engaged.
All of that happened after this song came out. So it was like prophetic. And it was, and also, you know, fitting since Despacito was last year's song of the summer. And so, you know, this song just, you know, brought me right back to like Good Riddance, Green Day, like kind of, you know, maybe not their rocking song, but for Selena Gomez, this is something different than she's done, and it's kind of a one-off. And for me, in her catalog, it kind of nails, or at least kind of brings together a lot of the pieces she's been playing with. Like, you've got that stripped down kind of whispery thing she does on her bigger pop songs on her albums, and this kind of feels like she's, you know, like taking something off of her bedroom floor and she's like trying it on for size, which I thought was refreshing. And, you know, I just love that first verse where she's talking about, you know, this addiction to a bad boyfriend. I mean, that, to me, those are my memories of summer.
Fair enough. Points for honesty, yes. You know, and we'll do, I don't know if anyone's got much to say about it, but let's sample Margot Price's Cocaine Cowboys. And Patrick Doyle, our colleague, wrote some records just sound better in summer. This is very Patrick. The soundtrack, The Harder They Come, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers live anthology, just about anything by the Grateful Dead.
He's not wrong.
Let's hear that song if we can.
Well, the boys round here, they let the boys back home. They don't plant the seeds, they won't work the farm.
And that's from Margot Price's really excellent, we've talked about it before on this podcast, her All-American Made album from last October. It does have a groove.
I like that song a lot. It does kind of sound like The Dead. To me, it sounds like the band. At my suggestion, Patrick added a reference to the band to his blurb, if anyone out there is reading this. You know, it has like a nice, it's nice to have like a
really,
little...
You couldn't let Patrick have that three-word clause in his movie. You had to take credit for it, but that's okay.
I don't think he agrees with me that it sounds like the band. I made him insert that because I think it sounds like the band.
Should have been a footnote.
I'm just trying to be upfront about this. Yeah, but no, anyway, it's a great, you know, summer classic rock song that you'd like to hear, like driving down the road with a top down, whatever.
We've actually played Snail Mail's Heatwave on this show before, but you know, just to be partisans for Snail Mail, who is you know, this incredibly promising 18-year-old singer songwriter. Let's hear that song again.
I'm so tired of moving on.
And then Harry Styles' Carolina. I kind of think there's only one good song on the Harry Styles album, wow. which is like a or maybe it's just that Sign of the Times, which is such a good song that we put it on the best songs of the 21st century, which we're going to, we will get into that list, hopefully do a couple episodes about that. But like that song is a Stone classic, like and to me the rest of the album maybe doesn't quite live up to the greatness of that song. But this song that we put on the list, Carolina, is like good. It's good. It's great.
I could not disagree with you more about the quality of the songs on that album. I think Sign of the Times is one of the weaker songs on the album. It's good.
You're nuts. But go on. Yeah. Not about the other songs being good, but to say that's the weak song.
It's a good song.
That song is awesome.
Yeah. I like that song. It's not bad, but a lot of the rest of the album has this kind of loose, fun, you know, playing guitar at a party energy to it that song is a little bit more strained and forced. Carolina is a good example of that. It sounds like kind of, it could be like a, you know, a Stones B-side. There's something fun about that.
I didn't really mean that it's the only good song on the album. It's the only great song on the album. For me, it's like one great song and a bunch of pretty good songs. But this is one of Carolina is one of the better ones. Let's hear it.
She's got a family in Carolina. So far away, but she says I remind her of home. Feeling oh so far from home.
Notice how it sounds a little bit like Stuck in the Middle with You?
It does.
I just, yeah.
Well, so there's a thing that people do, and I'm not saying that Harry Styles did this. Sometimes people reference tracks in the studio. There's an artist, I literally still can't say because the fact of this was off the record, but there's a very famous artist I was once in the studio with, and they were writing a song on what went on to be a very successful album over a Journey song. it was like a reference track. It didn't sample it. They pulled out this track, but they were matching the sort of groove and vibe. And what you do is you kind of like record over that, make the vibe, and then yank the song out. And I'm not saying he did that, but there is a certain famous lawsuit that happened with a Pharrell Penn song, with the Robin Thicke song, that might have been a similar thing. You try to capture the vibe. I'm not trying to get Harry Styles in trouble here, but they may have modeled the vibe off of Stuck in the Middle with You.
I think that's okay though, because even Stuck in the Middle with You, the original Steelers Wheel song, is like a very direct Bob Dylan rip, and it worked for them. I think it's okay to rip that off.
I'm deeply offended by this. I think like seriously, whatever works. Like it's just, but just as a, they they may have bit vibes, but that goes way back. That's fine. Simon often thinks I'm making a criticism when I'm really stating a fact.
I just want to defend Harry.
Harry has a tough time in life. We need him to stick up. Where would he be without us? I love that our colleague Corey Groh picked this thing, Scars on Broadway Lives, and it's like sort of metal disco a little bit. It's a side project by the guitarist for System of a Down. So let's hear this System of a Down side project. Everybody dance when you dance, when you wanna dance, when you wanna dance, you will get in a trance. Everybody sees what they see, what they wanna see. That party's lit. I mean, that is like the definition. Brendan particularly likes that song. It's
like, I hate that song. Hadn't heard it before. It made it to our list. And I'll have a talk with Corey at some point.
I actually like it, though. I heard it for the first time this morning.
It's upsetting.
It's a little terrifying. It has, because it has sort of a Marshall, like a little bit of a Marshall.
It's a little scary.
It feels like a steel tip boot, I would say, is the problem.
It's no toxicity. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah. Well, it is. It's a different kind of toxicity. It's like, yeah. So before we leave our list of the songs of summer, maybe go a little broader, let's talk about Cardi B's I Like It. I already said that basically her whole album functions as the summer. But do you want to speak to that?
Yeah. I think Cardi had options on this album for like what was going to be the, when I first heard Invasion of Privacy, I wasn't sure what the song was that was going to hit the charts. It sounded like she had a couple. I'm glad it's this one. It's really, really fun. She sounds great on it. She's just very charismatic, has good instincts. It's a really good song.
It's crazy how talented she turned out to be.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Because like we weren't sure. I mean, we said this before, but it's like, I mean, she could have not been that talented at all. It could have been a fluke. And it's just, it's wild to me how many different, and that she's versatile and,
and getting better.
Yeah.
We'll see. She hasn't released too much new music. She's busy. But I think that right now she's at a very good place in her career where there's only upside. Like, it just seems like there's a lot of places she can take this.
Well, let's hear that. I like it.
Now, I like dollars, I like diamonds, I like stunning, I like shining, I like million-dollar deals, where's my pen, bitch, I'm signing, I like those Balenciagas, the ones that look like socks, I like going to the Tula, I put rocks all in my watch, I like sexes from my exes when they want a second chance, I like proving niggas wrong.
So sometimes people release songs that are sort of blatantly songs of the summer, or attempts to be, and there's a few of those. Childish Gambino has released a Summertime Magic, which seems like, I mean, it's just, we all know that that Donald Glover thinks he sort of hacked the matrix to reality itself, and that he thinks he can sort of, and often is correct, that he just sort of understands, like, here's how you make a hit TV show, here's how you make a song that everyone talks about. And now my feeling listening to this song is, this is him like, I'm gonna hack how you make a summertime pop hit. I'm not entirely, it's pretty good, and it's impressive, because it's yet another kind of switch in direction for him. But let's hear it if we can. What I actually really like about it is the sort of slight palpable cynicism in it. Like, it's like, it's like, fuck you, I'll make a hit. Like a summertime thing that sounds like this, like, I can do that. To me, it's so blatant that I kind of like it. What do you think, Bernard?
It's kind of boring.
Yeah. I think it honestly sounds
like it would be a hit in 2016. It's just like it's got that like very tropical housey, like affected steel drum.
Yeah, we were talking about the trap house thing, which is a weird throwback for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure it'll be kind of successful. I don't think he's hacked the Matrix to any, like, I don't think that he's about to like go number one with this one, unless the, like, This Is America, he has some kind of global warming themed video that like drives everybody crazy. I think it's fine. I think he's good at making songs. This is not his best.
High praise.
Yeah.
What do you make of him putting this out right after This Is America?
I think that This Is America was meant to be a standalone thing. I think it was a song that they knew would get a lot of attention, but I think it blowing up the way it did and hitting number one was a genuine surprise for him. I don't think he thought that was a like pop hit. When I talked to his team the night it came out after he hosted SNL, and they weren't talking about it like it was a single for a new album. They were just kind of like, yeah, it's a song. And then when it went number one, I was like, Are you sure it's not a single for a new album? I would rethink that if I were you. I think he can do a lot of different things. I think he likes to be a person who shows a lot of different sides to himself. And so it makes a lot of sense that he would have very different songs come out the same year and keep that, like, you can't tell me what I am good at, like, vibe going for as long as he can.
Right, I can fly now. Like, it's like
maybe you can.
I mean, I wouldn't be 1,000% surprised. It's just like I figured it out. Like I could fly. Justin Timberlake did that thing we were talking before the show. There's a thing I feel like Gaga kind of invented, which is like, if your album comes out and people are like, eh, and then while you're still in the album, it's like, you're like, well, here's another song. And because that was not a move until recently. No one really did that. But Justin did that. And my theory was that this song is called Soulmate. And at the beginning of it, he goes, Summer Starts Now. And my theory / joke was it actually was just an outtake from the album that he added the phrase Summer Starts Now to try to. It turns out, at least by their account, that is not true. This is just recorded, fresh off the computer, and it's actually with frequent Drake collaborators. So, which also is interesting. It's almost like he's been looking at the charts, you know. And he's like, "Huh, Drake. I don't see Justin Timberlake. So let's hear that song." And I can feel your frequency, so unique. In other words, such a freak. Set me free. I wanna be your soulmate. It's actually growing on me. My first listen, I didn't like it as much, and now it might be growing. Maybe it's the song of the summer. What if he did it?
I don't think that Justin Timber Drake is the song of the summer.
So Ariana Grande has a new song called "God Is a Woman," but No Tears Left to Cry has so far been the Ariana Grande song, and it's a good song. And it was also, I mean, you know, without being crass, it's, you know, she was in a tough position where she had to have I really thought a lot about this, because it's interesting to think about sort of from an A&R perspective and from a manager's perspective. It's like, when you have a sort of pop star who does light, fluffy songs, and that's her thing, and you had this awful, awful, awful tragedy that happened that was the main thing associated with her for leading up to this album, it's like, how do you come out with a song that covers the basis of, here's a hit song that's kind of fun, but, you know, somehow acknowledges the context? That is a really brutal dilemma. I actually felt bad for her and her team in having to deal with it, and I think, you know, without being sounding too sort of like, again, like mercenary or whatever about it, it's just, as far as solving that dilemma, you got to give credit to this song, don't you think?
Yeah, they threaded that needle pretty well. I think No Tears Left to Cry, I think it's a great song, and it has that kind of emotional range where it can function both as a sad song and as a song that you dance to on the dance floor or whatever. It works both ways.
Yeah, you said dance to on the dance floor.
Did that sound really convincing? Can you guys tell how much time I spend dancing on the dance floor?
Let's hear this song and we can all dance on the dance floor together to it. We can. I wanna be in that girl.
picking it up. I'm loving, I'm living, I'm picking it up. I'm picking it up, picking it up.
I have to say, that moment of transition was actually one of my favorite pop music moments of the year. I listened to that a bunch of times. I think it there's something really satisfying about it.
Yeah.
The changing groove, the changing, it's very clever and very well done. I really, really like that. She's deceptive. It's weird that like that her she's good. You know, it's a strange thing. Like I think people were almost wanting her to be bad in some ways, but she's not bad. She's good.
She's weird.
God is a woman. I don't know if any of us have fully digested yet, but let's hear that at least because I'm sure it does seem like a contender.
You love how I move you. You love how I touch you, my one. When all is said and done, you will believe God is a woman. And I feel it after midnight, a feeling that you can't fight, my one. It lingers when we're done, you will believe God is a woman.
So, Brendan, we were talking again as we started at the beginning of this show. There's, you know, a whole album worth of Drake candidates, I guess, for Song of the Summer, and if you believe the charts, they're all the Song of the Summer, which is again my problem with the chart. That can't be. I'm sorry. See, I just proved my point. Like they cannot all be. However, in my feelings, that song's sick, and that is a real contender.
Yeah, I think Drake is for the second time this year going to trade number one spots with himself. I think in my feelings is like the clear front runner for the successor to Nice for What, which was the successor to God's Plan. It spawned the like requisite dance challenge.
The dance thing, I was trying to figure this out. It became a meme that everyone's doing. Did that just happen? Is there any way that Drake's people somehow spawned that, or did it truly just happen spontaneously?
This one seems like it all came from this like internet comedian named Shiggy, who has a huge Instagram following in his own right. That has been a thing. I think the most famous one is the Black Beatles challenge, where that was kind of a thing that people noticed was happening, and then the team behind Ray Schremmerd, or like around Ray Schremmerd, I don't think they were like personally involved, started to like seed it as like, we can push this song really far because of this meme.
Right, and then what people, we were talking about the way that the charts work. The other thing that's interesting about the way the charts work is if you can get your song in a lot of YouTube clips, and for example with a viral dance challenge, that will greatly, greatly help you get to number one. Black Beatles is a great example, and that's why I wondered, they're so savvy, Drake's team. This might be this is just an example of like it even just works in their favor even when they're not trying.
I don't have any inside line, so it's certainly possible. It seemed organic to me, but I wouldn't put it past anyone at this point to try and get their own viral dance trend started.
There's two things about Drake, that you know, there's a line on the first track that his Mount Rushmore is just him with different expressions, which is, it's so great. It's so great because the chart right at number six, number seven, and number eight on the chart are In My Feelings, I'm Upset, and Emotionless, which is just so great. Sarah, what were we going to say?
Well, it actually sounds like he's listening to a lot of Selena Gomez this summer. But
She's also in her feelings. Well, let's hear In My Feelings. Not My Feelings, though. It's Drake's feelings, but, you know. Yep.
Kiki, do you love me? Are you riding? Say you never ever leave from beside me, because I want you and I need you. I'm down for you always, KB. Do you love me? Are you riding? Say you never ever leave from beside me.
And we only have a couple minutes left, but there's a dark horse candidate sort of for the Song of the Summer is by Juice WRLD, who is a very interesting to me sort of genre leaping artist. He's kind of doing emo, but coming to it from the hip hop world. And while that's been a strain that's been bubbling for the last few years, to me he's the most emo rapper. I mean, he's just, I mean, you know, it's just emo over, you know, like trap beats. It's nuts to me. I find it deeply fascinating. You know, it's like you'll hear him the way he sings. He sounds like he's singing like he's in a Fueled by Ramen band in 2006. But let's hear Lucid Dreams by Juice WRLD. And then there's this Sting sample.
No, 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 no.
You about to get me back? You about to get me back?
take back the love that I gave you. It's to the point why I love and
I mean, you see what I'm saying? That's not a subtle emo influence. It's crazy. And then it's just when you just absorb the oddity, the other, you know, is Simon who heard the sting in there, which is also on a, you know, famously on a Nas song and actually on a whole bunch of other songs. But it's just like a sting sample on a hip hop song with a dude singing like old emo is crazy. Anyway, that is our summer 2018. Thanks to Sarah Grant and Brendan Klinkenberg and Simon Vosick-Levinson for being here. That is our show. I'm Brian Hyatt. This is Rolling Stone Music Now. We'll be back next week here on Sirius XM's Volume Channel 106 at 1 p.m. on Friday. In the meantime, we are a podcast. You should download us as a podcast. You should subscribe to us as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts and maybe leave us a nice review on iTunes. As always, thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker. Although I didn't really work with her a lot. But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a three-page makeout scene that just kept going? Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.